the 70s, so that was before we had invented safety glass. We figured shards were healthy. And my friend Bobby Kinsey, who was a couple years younger than me, and somebody, it wasn't me, I wasn't there. I think actually pilfering through my dad's desk in his office, if I remember correctly. I don't know what I was looking for, probably a book. I hear this smash, and I come running out to see Bobby had been, and Bobby was my sister's age, so he was, you know, he was probably 10 or 11. He and somebody else, they had been fighting over whether he was going to be able to get into the church building or not, and pushed through the glass window. And fortunately, Bobby fell backwards, and so the glass fell. Anyway, I always get worried about kids and glass and things like that. So that's why these windows are supposed to be safe, Sean, right? Anyway, we had one window break a couple of weeks ago. It just fell out of its frame and smashed, and it was fun, but the manufacturer replaced it. A couple of things that are going on, just so you know. On the back of the bulletin is all the outdoor services for this year. They're on the list. We scheduled them ahead of time so that Becky could not sign up for them. Because Becky never signs up. She just says, look, we'll tell you if we're not going to be here. That's the Hathco plan. So we have the schedule coming out. And June 11th, which is the first one, we're gonna do a guitar choir. So if you play guitar and you are interested in being a part, we send an email out. But you want to just get together, we're just going to jam. It doesn't have to be perfect. It's not going to be amazing. It's going to be just a bunch of people who love the Lord playing three chords and hoping and praying all at the same time. And so we're going to practice on May 30th at 7 o'clock. We're going to run over it, and then we're just gonna lead. So we've already got about 8 or 9 people playing. So that gives you an idea. This is just a lot of guitars, and we're just going to play together. We're going to play a few simple songs and let the congregation sing outside and drive our neighbors crazy. That's the plan. And then the rest of them are there. We like to do this. We have a cookout. We cook up hamburgers and hot dogs and whatever else people will bring. Folks bring sides. We set up tables. We enjoy lunch together. It's always a great time. And just as we're looking forward to this year, we're looking for opportunities to do small things, small stuff that does big things. And we always have opportunities both in the Sunday worship services for folks to help out, whether it's helping out ushering or doing a little bit of cleanup stuff or working down in God's backyard or helping with the nursery or doing coffee or whatever it is. There's always things that are going on. We are looking for somebody, and this is just something to throw out there. We are looking for somebody to, in the next couple of months, take over the video streaming of the services. If you've seen the video stream on Facebook, believe it or not, that's just my phone. I put my phone on a tripod and I set it up back in the sound booth and we let it run, which is why it's not the highest quality image. There's not great audio or anything like that. We did receive some funds last year for buying a camera and setting that up. We pretty much figured out which camera we're going to get and how we're going to do it. But we are going to need somebody that will be responsible for setting that stream up, making sure that it's working, getting on Facebook, all of that stuff. So if that's your bag and it's something you're interested in doing. Now, if you come to me and say, I have no technical skills, I have no idea what I'm doing, I've never owned a video camera, but I'm willing to help, we're probably going to say, this is not the thing for you. We really want somebody that can take this and run with it, and this is ideal, I'm going to throw this at, without me having to help. All right? You say, why? Because any of you that ever tried to do stuff with me, you know that if I know how to do it, I wind up doing it. So we really want you to, we want somebody that can take this and run with it, and we'll do the work and just kind of make sure it goes up every Sunday, that the stream is running. So that's not something we need right away. It's just something we're putting out there along the way. Okay, that just about covers that stuff. So let's get into the book of Job, because we are in the best part of the book of Job. Job chapter 38. This is the book of Job. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense until we get to chapter 38. Job is all about, up until this point, with the exceptions of chapter 1 and chapter 2, and maybe Job's songs that are fit in there, for the most part, the book of Job is a bunch of people giving advice that is sort of, kind of, okay. It is a bunch of people saying, well, I think it I think this happened to you, Job, all the bad things that happened, your children dying, your harvest being wiped out, your cattle being wiped out, your wife surviving, all of those bad things that happened to you. Those are I was specific to Job's wife, not wives in general. All these bad things that have happened to you, Job, here's the reason. Here's what you have done. Here's what you haven't done. Here's the way that you should fix this. And even last week we talked about Elihu, and Elihu's argument basically is to Job is that God is completely distant. He is completely different from you, and you have to treat him that way. You have to just take it. You just have to accept it. That's the way that it goes. And as Eric Wittenberg pointed out when we were going through, the one thing that was missing from Elihu was grace. He never argues that God is a God of grace. And as if you've been with us for a while, you know that I will often say that the defining characteristic of the God of the Bible is chesed, loving kindness, steadfast love, grace. That is who he is. It is at the very core of his being as the divine one, as the sovereign, as the God. He is a being of grace. He is not a being of justice who chooses to give grace. He is a being of grace who unfortunately sometimes has to mete out justice. And it's important that we see God as a God of grace. Because if we see God as a malicious being who is out to beat you up and take things away from you, you have a very warped view of God. But if you start with the idea that everything God does is grace, it will change the way you think about him, and it will change the way you think about your world. Well, in Job chapter 38, after everybody has expressed their opinion, after human wisdom has been exhausted, as Job, sitting in the ash pit, as he's described, scraping the boils from it, cauterizing the wounds of the disease that he has because the devil has sicked illness on him. As his three friends and this young upstart Elihu, who have been telling him everything that's wrong with him for 37 chapters, as they are wrapping it up from behind them, Job looks beyond them and he sees a whirlwind coming. Now, if you've ever been anywhere in a desert, you know that generally speaking, if you're in a flat plain, how many of you have ever been on the Great Plains or the High Plains? You know that you can basically, you can see Nebraska from Iowa. There's not a whole lot in the way. Edom is a land of plateaus. This is where this story seems to take place. And when you're at the Dead Sea, when you're on the western coast of the Dead Sea, and you look across the Dead Sea at Moab and Edom, you see these heights, and then it just flattens off. There's just these big plateaus. Edom is just a big plateau on the eastern side of the Dead Sea, and so it's pretty flat. And so you could see stuff coming, weather coming from a long ways off. And so Job seems to see this whirlwind in chapter 38. And verse 1, if you're visiting with us, there's Bibles in the racks in front of you. There's a page number there in the bulletin, page 376. But chapter 38 and verse 1, the Lord, Yahweh, it's capitalized, right? Lord, this is his covenant name, Yahweh or Jehovah, I am that I am, answered Job out of the whirlwind and said. And so we're going to look at that this morning. I invite you to join me in prayer again this morning. Father, as we look at your words, help our being to come in tune with your message, to resonate and reverberate with your words and your grace, that we might become your hands and your feet, that we might live out the words that we see, the glory that is revealed, that others might see you when they see us. We pray this through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. And the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind, and he said. Now, you need to understand something about Hebrew rhetoric, right? Ancient Near East rhetoric. Although Yahweh is answering Job, his message is not just to Job. It is to the three friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. It is to the young upstart Elihu. And it is most importantly to us, the audience. He is answering to us. For 37 chapters, we have heard the best of human wisdom, and we have seen it fall flat. We have seen an anthropocentric, which is a big word for man-centered. Anthropos is the Greek word for man. Anthropocentric means man-centered. Egocentric, me-centered. We have seen anthropocentric and egocentric arguments being made about why Job is going through what Job is going through. And now, finally, God, the one who is sovereign and ultimately responsible, is going to speak, and he wants us to hear. Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Dress for action like a man, and I will question you, and you make it known to me. Who is it that speaks and casts shadow in light because he does not understand what the light is? Who is it that is willing to speak for me? Let him stand forward and I will ask him some questions. That's what Yahweh says. And then he begins. Now I'm going to tell you something. This is the most beautiful part of the book of Job, in my opinion. We so often read this as God reprimanding Job. I don't think that's what he's doing at all. He is calling us to a foundation of worship in our decisions and our understanding of what happens in our lives. Here's what he starts with. Verse 4. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? In other words, who leveled it out? On what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy? So the very first thing that he deals with is the foundations of the earth. The deep mystery of what is the earth? Where does it come from? He's not giving us a scientific analysis of the nature of earth. I've heard people say, see, cornerstones, God in Job, God says the earth is flat. No, that's not what he says. He says, do you know how the earth is what the earth is? Do you know why it is the way it is, where it is, how it moves? Do you understand that? Were you there when it happened? So he begins with this statement about the foundation of the earth. Then in verse 8, or who shut in the sea with doors when it burst out from the womb? When I made clouds its garments and thick darkness its swaddling band, and prescribed limits for it, and set bars and doors, and said, thus far shall you come and no further, and here shall your proud waves be stayed. Now, what's he describing there? He's describing the horizon of the sea. If you've ever gone to the ocean, you know that you can see clouds at the edge of the ocean, right? You look out to the horizon, you see the clouds. You look out to the horizon, you're looking at the sea, and you see the darkness of night. And you can tell the difference between the darkness of the sky and the darkness of the water. You can see that edge. He says, were you there when I decided where that would be? Where the edge between the sky and the waters would be? Were you there when I decided whether the oceans would overwhelm the earth or if they would sit at the level that they sit at? Were you there? Did you do it? Verse 12, have you commanded the morning since your days began and caused the dawn to know its place, that it might take hold of the skirts of the earth and the wicked be shaken out of it? It is changed like clay under the seal, and its features stand out like a garment. From the wicked their light is withheld, and their uplifted arm is broken. Have you entered into the springs of the sea or walked in the recesses of the deep? Have the gates of death been revealed to you, or have you seen the gates of deep darkness? Have you comprehended the expanse of the earth? Declare if you know all this. Now again, he's dealt with this kind of the foundations of the sea, and then he begins to dig in deeper as he explores the idea of the edges of the earth. When he talks about the light and the morning and the dawn. So he's dealt with the foundation of the earth, right? He's talked about, do you know why the earth is what the earth is? He says, did you set the boundaries of the horizon? Did you decide when the sun would rise and when the sun would set? Now, if you know anything about Israel, all right, Israel is a north-south country. So to them, the east, that's where the sun rises, and the west. Now, we would usually think, well, the west, that means that's where the sun sets. They don't think that way. In their language, the west is the ocean, the Mediterranean Sea. So were you here when I set the sea, the west? Were you here when I set the dawn, the east? Did you establish the foundations of all that we are and all that where we are? This poem just gives me chills. I love this poem. Where is the way to the dwelling of light, verse 19? Where is the place of darkness, that you may take it to its territory and that you may discern the paths to its home? You know, for you were born then, and the number of your days is great. This puts Job on good standing, by the way, when he uses sarcasm to respond to his friends, because right there, God is being sarcastic. You see that line? Verse 21, you know, for you were born then, and the number of your days is great. Verse 22, have you entered the storehouses of the snow? Have you seen the storehouses of the hail, which I have reserved for the time of trouble, for the day of battle and war? What is the way to the place where the light is distributed, or where the east wind is scattered upon the earth? And so as he goes and digs into this, right? He's talked about the earth, and he's talked about the dawn, and he's talked about the sun, the horizon. And then he talks about the seasons, and the rain, and the hail, and the snow. The precipitation that gives life to this world on the edge of the desert. This is a moment where he says, do you know where it is? Do you know where the snow is kept? Do you know where the hail comes from? Can you make it on your own? And remember, he's speaking to us, the audience. Verse 25, who has cleft a channel for the torrents of rain and a way for the thunderbolt? To bring rain on a land where no man is, on the desert in which there is no man, to satisfy the waste and the desolate land, and to make the ground sprout with grass. Has the rain a father? Who has begotten the drops of dew? From whose womb did the ice come forth? And who has given birth to the frost of heaven? The waters become hard like stone, and the face of the deep is frozen. Now, I don't know if you noticed this, but what is Yahweh doing here? He's arguing a polemic. Now, a polemic is an argument against false gods by using truth. In the world that Job lives in the polytheistic world that Job lives in, where there are all these multiple gods, what do all of the gods do? They all have responsibilities in nature. One is a god of the rain, one is a god of the storms, one is a god of the thunder, one is god of the lightning, one's god of the fire, one god of the dawn, all of these things. Well, what is Yahweh doing? Who? Who's responsible for all of this, he says? Who's in charge? Verse 31. Can you bind the chains of the Pleiades or loose the cords of Orion? Can you lead forth the Maseroth in their season, or can you guide the bear with its children? The bear, by the way, you guys know what the bear is in the sky? All right, Ursa Major, Ursa Minor. All right, that's an ancient name for those constellations, the Big Dipper, the Little Dipper. They're the bear, all right, the bear and her children. The North Star and all that stuff. Maseroth is some other constellation. We don't know what it is. Verse 33, do you know the ordinances of heaven? Can you establish their rule on earth? He answers astrology and the power of the stars. He says, do you know? Do you know how the stars work? Or are you just guessing at this? Can you lift up your voice to the clouds, verse 34, that a flood of water may cover you? Can you send forth lightnings that they may go and say to you, here we are? Who has put wisdom in the inner parts or given understanding to the mind? Who can number the clouds by wisdom? Who can tilt the waterskins of the heavens when the dust runs into a mass and the clods stick fast together? Who? 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 Who established the earth? Who established the horizon? Who set the dawn and the setting of the sun? Who decided the seasons? Who decides when rain comes, when hail falls, when snow is stored up and when it is manifest? Who decides what is the desert and what is the sea? Who decides how the stars move in the sky? Who? See, the problem that Yahweh addresses is that all of Job's counselors want to decide their theology and their beliefs and their doctrine based on their circumstances. They want to look at the moment and react to it. Oh no! Job, your life is miserable. Quick, fix something! Anything! Fix it now. They are freaking out with Job. They're saying to Job, quick, you got to do something. Persuade God that you're a good person. Make the things work. Do the stuff. Yahweh's response is not, Job, I'm here to tell you everything you've done wrong. His response is, who? Why does he respond that way? I'll tell you why. This is what I believe. I believe that Yahweh responds this way because they need to be reminded who God is and who they are not. The beginning of the answer to Job's problem for us and for Job's friends is to remember that the one who did all of these things, the one who can answer all of these questions, is the God who knows me. Job's counselors looked at his circumstances to try to understand what God was doing in Job's life. And when Yahweh appears, he says, don't look at the circumstances. Let's begin with creation. See, we as human beings, we love to look at the little stuff. We focus on the details. We bury ourselves in all the little things. And we go, oh, there's this problem and this problem and that problem and this problem and that problem. And I do this one and then 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 do this one. Yahweh says, stop. Stop. Back up. Back up. Back up. See the big picture, and then ask yourself who's in charge of it. Then why are you so afraid of this? Why are you so worried about this tiny little detail when I have the whole thing in my hands? Why are you so obsessed with the circumstances and the moment when I hold eternity and the edges of time? Why are you worried about whether I'll show up in time to fix your problems when I'm the one who decides what time is in the first place? Why are you worried about this season of struggle when I'm the one who creates all the seasons? You're focused on yourself. Eliphaz, Bildad, Zophar, Elihu, Job, to a certain extent, you're all worried about this moment, but I'm God. I'm God. All moments are my moments. All darkness is my darkness. All light is my light. All powers ultimately are mine. And you're worried about this, but I've got this. See, the extraordinary thing about Job's faith in God, although Job is flawed and broken, is that Job has this underlying belief that whatever God gave me, he has the right to take away because he's God. And whatever God takes away, if he chooses to, he could give it back to me. This is what his buddies don't understand. His buddies are worried about, oh, you lost this, quick, do something to fix it. And Job says, well, if I lost it, it's because God wanted it. Yahweh begins with creation. And you don't have to turn there, but if you want to, Genesis chapter 1 and verse 14 and verses 15, God says, let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years, and let them be lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light upon the earth. And it was so. When Yahweh creates the world in Genesis chapter 1, he creates light, and he says, and this is so you will know as time passes. You will know that time passes and that I gave it to you. In Genesis chapter 8 and verse 22, he repeats this to Noah. After the flood, Noah comes out of the flood and God, the Lord smells Noah's sacrifices. He says, I will never again curse the ground because of man, for the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I ever again strike down every living creature as I have done. That line right there, by the way, chesed. Let me read it again just so you hear it. I will never again curse the ground because of man, for the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. He says, I will not do it again because you are evil. Now that's an extraordinary act of grace right there. Because wiping you out won't fix the problem. But then he says this, while the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. Why will they not cease? So that we can see them and we can know he is God. So God takes Job back to creation. He takes Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar back to creation. He takes them to the foundation of who they are, of where they are situated. He brings them away from their circumstances and he says, are you in charge of all of this? Do you think that I have forgotten you? See, Elihu's number one argument was that God was so distant that he didn't care about Job. Just do what you need to do. God isn't interested in a personal relationship with you. God isn't interested with your fallacies. God is only interested in your righteousness. So be righteous and God will like you. Or rather, God just won't take any notice of you, is really what Elihu is saying. And Yahweh appears and he says, no, 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 I have never not taken interest in you. I have never not taken a notice of every single snowflake on earth that falls to the ground, that every drop of rain, every dawn, every sunset, every ocean, every sea, every plain, every summer, every spring, every winter, every fall. He says, I know everything that happens. Do you? Do you? Sometimes in the midst of the distraction of living, we just need to be reminded what life is. We need to be reminded where life comes from. When we sit on the precipice of death, and we look down into the deep recess and an abyss of where our reasoning and understanding and perception ends. So often we balk and we back away and we say, I don't know what's on the other edge of that. I'm terrified of it. And Yahweh says, it's mine too. That's mine too. Sometimes we are in seasons so dark and dread and horrible that we simply cannot put one foot ahead of the next because we are lost in our circumstance. And just living is a burden. And Yahweh says, back up, back up, back up, back up, back up, back up, back up. Who's God in this equation? Who is God in this equation? I remember in 1992 when my dad's best friend was killed. And for me, a young teenager who was very confused, had just moved to a new area, and I've talked about this before, the process of me going kind of deep into my atheism before God finally pulled me out of it. And this was kind of the beginning of it. I had lost my best friend, and now my dad had lost his best friend, and then my cousin had died in a kayaking accident at 19. There was just this series of tragedies. And I just remember my dad saying about his friend Joe, who he loved more than a brother. He just said, well, maybe God just wanted him to be with him. Maybe Joe's time with me was over. And his time with the Lord was more important to God. And he said, maybe God one day just said to Joe, it's just time for you to come home. I'll never forget my dad teaching about Enoch in the book of Genesis. The Bible says he walked with God and he was not, for God took him. My dad said, the way that my dad used to describe that, he says, you know, God and Enoch are just walking down the street. And one time God says to Enoch, hey, we're closer to my house than yours. Why don't we just go there? And this, that we look at these dark moments in our lives and we're so worried about them. And where does our worry for those moments come from? It comes from me dwelling on the circumstance instead of backing out and seeing the creation and its creator. And the thing about it is, and you need to get this about Yahweh in this moment, he's not indicting us and saying that that's bad and evil and wrong. He's just saying it's human. We all do it. We all get lost in the spiral of the dark. We all get drawn into this. People say, well, only so, you know, if somebody's struggling with something difficult in their life, maybe they need a medication. My dad and I were just talking about this. He and I are made of a similar fabric, I guess you could say. We are the kind of people that just continue to take a step forward. We fight for every moment of our lives. We are fighters. That's what my dad and I do. We fight. We resist. You know that line from Rogue One, this is a resistance, I resist it. You know, or this is a rebellion, we rebel. We've always been fighters. We have always pushed against the flow. We've always, you guys know me, I'm not a status quo person. I like a challenge. And he and I were talking about it, and he was talking about when he and my mom separated, and they put him on an anxiety medication, and it took away his willingness to fight. He just accepted. And the funny thing was, it sent him into a depression spiral. Because he didn't want to not care. Caring is what made him step. Caring is what made him move. The heartbreak was what moved him forward. And he and I are very much the same way like that. It is the tragedy, it is the darkness, it is the challenge of the circumstance that makes me more reliant upon my God to continue to step. When I no longer care about anything, when I'm no longer fighting to see the glory of God, I'll just lay down and let the world run me over. The path of faith, the path of seeing the Creator, the path of walking is hard because it's very easy for us to just dwell on this circumstance, to focus into the microcosm and say, this is all that matters at this moment. I don't care about anything else. I got to get this problem fixed. It is hard to see from God's perspective. It is hard to be blinded by the whirlwind. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. Healing and understanding begin with worshiping God as He is and seeing myself as I am. Yahweh doesn't start with you're wrong. He doesn't start with let me tell you the way it's supposed to be. He simply begins with who. And as I read Job, honestly, as I get to Job, and when he finally responds, after, there's another chapter we're going to deal with next week of Yahweh's speaking, where he deals with some other things. But when Yahweh finally says to Job, so what do you want to do about this? Job is down on the ground. He's weeping. I'm not going to answer this. I'm not going to challenge this. This is all true. This is real. This is the reality. This is what I've been trying to communicate and doing such a bad job of trying to get it out of my heart and my mind. Understanding begins with worship. Healing begins with worship. When somebody says to me, I'm just too tired to worship. I'm too overwhelmed to spend time reading the Bible. I'm too depressed to fellowship with other believers. That's the moment when you need to do those things. Because your healing doesn't begin with you dwelling on yourself. Your healing begins with you dwelling on God. And I know that sounds simplistic and it doesn't sound very modern and chic and cool, but it's the fact of the matter of faith. Our faith is not about what we get from God. It is about who God is. And when you dwell on what you're going to get God to do, that is not Christian faith. Christian faith begins with who God is, and the only way that you understand who He is by entering into the works and acts of worship. We have to step back and see the Creator so we can understand our circumstance. But if we try to see the Creator through our circumstance, it is like looking through a keyhole in a room that we will never understand and we will never comprehend and we will always be confused about, and we will get frustrated and angry because we want the God we see through the keyhole instead of the God who created the universe. And that's the beginning of Yahweh's message to Job, to Eliphaz, to Bildad, to Zophar, to Elihu, to you and me. It begins with who. Not an indictment, not a condemnation, simply a question. He calls us to rise above our circumstances and perceive the God of all creation so that He can begin the process of mending us at the cosmic spiritual level instead of at our circumstances. You say, I don't have enough faith to do that. Of course you don't. I don't. Nobody does. Yahweh calls us to it. He does not say, you've already got it. He says, come and see. Who? He asks these questions because they couldn't see it without first being asked those questions. He challenges them to back up because they've never backed up before. And all of this is just the beginning of Job's process, of the redemption of Job's friends. And we'll get into more of it next week. Join me in a word of prayer. Heavenly Father, we so often call you great and good. And we filter those words through our circumstances. We say you are good because you have given us something. We say you are great because you have done something for us. Invert our perspective and turn our focus. Back us up that we might see your greatness and glory as what they are. So much bigger and vaster than any moment in our lives. So much brighter than any darkness we might journey through. So much more visible than any precipice we might believe we stand on the edge of. Father, call us to yourself that we might know your voice and your heart. Your grace, your mercy, your truth. Transform us by your word. Give us the faith to worship when we are weak. to serve when we are suffering, to live and breathe as the children of God.